I think it's a terrible idea because I don't, it's not, not nothing misogynistic. That sounds like a lead into a different podcast.
Wow, Ryan. It's,
but it is. Hey, welcome everybody to the Screen Crush Crossover Universe podcast. I am here with my co-host, Heather Antos.
And I'm here with Ryan Airy. How's it going, Ryan?
I'm good. Heather, so this is a new thing. This is an actual podcast. It's going to be fun. We have a special guest coming on. We have Patrick Willems a little bit later.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, he's good people. He's a fellow YouTuber, much smarter than me. So I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say and feeling dumb when he starts to talk about Bollywood. I do want to also plug a fun thing that we're going to try out. We're going to do a little segment called Hear Me Out at the end of this episode where Heather and I, and maybe Pat if he wants to play along, say our brutal hot take that we think the internet should embrace, especially in the form of commenting. Heather, what's going on? Talk to me real quick because I think you've been better.
I've got a fever, Ryan. I'm not feeling so great.
And is the cure cowbell or is it a literal fever?
It's a literal fever. I'm here with my Gatorade. I'm here. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. Did some traveling this weekend. I was at a convention.
Where at? Which convention?
New Brunswick. I was up it's called East Coast Comic Expo. It's up in Moncton, New Brunswick. It's kind of like just north of Maine. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful area. Very rural. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. A lot of lobster there.
Okay. Yeah. Now, was the convention good apart from being riddled with disease? How did it go?
It was a good show. It's a small show. You know, maybe like, you know, 3,000 people. So nothing like the New York Comic Con, 150,000 like we're used to.
I've only ever been to the two Comic Cons and then the New Jersey Super Expo where we did a live show.
Yes.
It was like an encore live show that ended up having to be a Screen Crush unplugged acoustic performance. And you riffed the whole thing with me. And gosh, was I grateful because that was a fun convention, but an incredibly stressful show. I think everybody had a good time, though.
It was a great time. Yeah. I was worried. I have never seen you so stressed in the entire time I've known you.
I have been way more stressed than that. My main thing was people paid for a show.
That's true. Yeah.
So like if people pay for a show, I want to deliver it. But there were just all these things that like weren't set up, AV-wise. But I think they got a fun thing. They got a more personal interaction.
Absolutely.
With us,
yeah.
Which is really cool. Yeah. I got some cool news to tell you. So we got screeners for Ironheart, and I've only seen we don't know when this is coming out. We know it's going to drop on a Sunday. We're probably going to stack these. So by the time you guys see this, we've probably already talked about it on the channel, but I want to see Heather's reaction. I'm in the second episode of Ironheart. Some graphic designer put my name on a keyboard, like on a screen. Yeah. So like I'm canon in Star Wars and in the MCU now.
That's so cool. So
for like Thanos, I'm going to have like a whole gauntlet full of these franchises that I have cameos in.
You know, I had nearly forgotten that Ironheart was coming out. You would have completely, you know,
well,
Disney's not really done much for it. I got to say.
Well, it's weird that they're doing the schedule like, okay, they're dropping three episodes for the first week they announced. I was like, okay, cool. So like maybe you don't really get the gist of it. You need to like, you know, like the first episode maybe isn't that strong. They've done, Andor did that, right? The first three episodes dropped on the same day of season one. And I thought, well, maybe they're doing that. And then they're going to like have these come out until fans. No, they're dropping all three episodes the next week. It's almost like they can't wait to get rid of it. Except then it would be they're going to. Yeah. Yeah. And they've already, like, there's already leaks coming out about which episode Mephisto shows up in and stuff like that, which we're not going to, I haven't watched that far ahead. I've only watched the first episode, but then I kind of skimmed the second episode for my name, like I do every Marvel show. And then it just happened to come up. So that was pretty cool. I don't know which Screen Crush fan works at Marvel. They could have been referencing a different Ryan Airy. That would be, to quote Christopher from The Sopranos, some fucking coincidence. But they might have done that.
Which episode does Palpatine return in?
Palpatine, they actually save him for episode 7, which they didn't plan or announce, but it still comes back later on.
Oh.
I guess, yeah. Oh, gosh. I had a hard time even making a joke about that. It still hurts. That movie came out in 2019, 6 years ago, right? There are children who were not born who have children of their own when that movie came out. And I, at least where I'm from. And I still can't get over that. I was so upset, literally, after somehow Palpatine returned.
That was, I mean, Ben and Rey kissing. I literally slid out of my chair to the floor.
In a good way or a bad way?
Bad way. Just literally, okay. I literally cringed so hard, I slid to the floor.
I don't know. I think like the servers on Archive of Our Own went down that night because of all of the fanfic that was coming up. Trying to think, the other thing about Ironheart is I don't know where people get their advertisements now. Because like when we were doing live shows in LA, people were like, hey, there's a Captain America movie coming out in a couple weeks, remember? But when I was in the airport, they had like massive walls mm-hmm. that were Captain America, Brave New World advertisements. It's not like we're all watching the same shows at night and we see trailers for them on the shows. It's kind of hard. Like you have to be plugged into so many different platforms to see these advertisements. So maybe they are publicizing it, but it's kind of getting lost.
Maybe
in the noise.
I'd be curious because like I'm watching other things at Disney Plus and the trailer's not popping up anywhere. Like I'm on the internet, it's not popping up anywhere. It's not getting TV spots. Like, you know, I feel like my algorithms, your algorithms are probably set up where if it was going to pop up, it'd pop up. And
I see it on socials for sure.
Yeah.
But that's because I subscribe to like Discussing Film and channels like that. So that's probably why it's popping up on mine. I mean, like I said, only one episode in. Yeah. I love Dominique Thorne. She's great. She's great in Wakanda Forever. Yeah. Haven't Anthony Ramos, I haven't seen enough of him. He looks incredibly silly in the hood costume. You know what I never read before? I read this today. Not to dive into comics, but I've never actually read the Hood comic book.
I haven't either, actually.
It's good. Brian K. Vaughan. Yeah. It's really good. I mean, it's one of those like early 2000s Marvel Max issues. Yep. And for you kids, Marvel Max is when they got rid of the Comics Code Authority so they could say swear words. So they say both F words in it.
Oh,
they say
man.
The R word. There's like, there's all these more like old man, because like at the time you can watch an episode of South Park and that was acceptable among my people. But that kind of thing bumps out like, oh, that's kind of immature, but it's a really good story. Yeah. I never really knew that character until Civil War. And he looks like badass in the comic, and Anthony Ramos is this guy. He's a guy in a cape, man. He looks like Larry David on that Seinfeld episode where he's the man in the cape.
Oh man, don't
I hope it gets better though. I like I said,
don't do my man Anthony Ramos wrong like that.
Can you talk, because we don't get to talk very often, what are you guys, and that's a, you know, if you guys don't know Heather at all, which I'm betting that just statistically speaking, most of you don't. Heather's constantly signing NDAs for things because she works on so many different properties through IDW. You read all these scripts ahead of time.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask you what you've signed NDAs for or anything like that, but like what comics are coming out that you guys are really excited about?
I did sign some two pretty big NDAs this week though for some very exciting things.
I wish we could hear about it.
I know. If I told you, I'd have to kill you. But this summer we are having a brand new Godzilla comic come out, Godzilla number one, the Kaisei era, where there's a group of teenagers that are getting the powers of the kaiju.
Okay. Now is that part of any Godzilla canon?
It's a brand new canon. Like a different, it's a brand new okay, Godzilla cool. universe, never seen before. It's kind of,
all right, that's fun.
It's kind of like mixing superhero powers with Godzilla. So it's really, really cool. It comes out right around San Diego Comic-Con. So we have that coming out. We also have a book that I'm working on that I'm really excited about called Red Shirts, which is all about the Red Shirts from the Star Trek original series era. If you know nothing about Star Trek, you know about Red Shirts and that they die a lot. And we're telling their story in this. And well, they die a lot.
You know, that's great. That reminds me of, it inspired the show, but one of the all-time best TNG episodes, Lower Decks, which is about the people who like scrub the floors, basically, like the lower officer, the people who are just like the enlisted officers. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Who's doing that?
Christopher Cantwell, who actually is the creator of the TV show Halt and Catch Fire, if you ever watched one. Yep.
Yeah.
He's writing that one.
Well, that's a get.
So it's super great. Yeah.
We've got some cool stuff coming out. And I think by the time this is out, you guys will have seen it. But we've got a pretty huge Sinners breakdown that just got finished up today. And Sinners was one of the most intimidating things I've ever written. Because for one thing, it's, you know, it's about the Black experience and the blues, and I'm not exactly the right guy to give insight into that. So there was a lot of research, but I love doing any video where I get to learn, right? So there were so many things like about, you know, West African hoodoo and all these other different cultural things that I'd never heard of before, different blues musicians. So the video honestly could have been 4 hours long. Like we could have like done scene by scene in that film, but we kind of restricted it in that way. Like our Winter Soldier breakdown is going to be over an hour because I'm literally going in every single scene and say, well, in this scene, but with Sinners, we kind of gave more of like a broad overview while still covering the whole thing. But great film. I wish I could have seen it in IMAX.
I can't wait to watch it. I actually got to see it in IMAX. I saw it in IMAX twice. It was nice. So good. So good.
I don't know if you ever watch Ryan Coogler talk about different formats, like film formats. He's such a nerd for that stuff. I guess there's like 16 or 17 different ways you could have watched it. Like there's the thing where the screens are on the side. But I think talking about film formats,
I was going to say,
is a perfect transition, right? To talk about our guest.
Yeah.
Heather, what can we possibly say about our guest today?
Well, I mean, he probably can talk more about film formats and film theory than anyone else I know.
And this guy is one of the first video essayists I remember ever seeing.
Oh, yeah.
He did an MCU video about colors and why the MCU looks kind of bad. His short films went viral, although my favorite one I don't think went viral. Maybe I'll ask him about that one. He's, to my knowledge, the only video essayist to turn his videos into a feature-length film. And he's just absolutely one of the best. He's the first guest we ever had on a talkback here. Say hello, everybody, to Mr. Patrick H. Willems. How you doing, Pat? I hope we didn't catch you at a bad time.
I feel like I'm like beet red from just blushing while I was off camera during the intro. That was very nice. It's a
blushing
to be
because
here.
We talked about you or because we talked about Palpatine returning.
Well, that was like 10 minutes ago. So I like I cooled off and then heated up again.
Nice.
Pleasure to be here. Yeah. Great to see you both.
Oh man, Pat, thanks for coming. Now I meant it earlier. Like you and I met because we had. I used to work at a summer camp where I taught kids video, and one of my former campers, it turns out, was your intern, and I know her as Betty. You had a completely different name for her that I guess she goes by now.
Elsie,
yeah. And then, she sent me, and I'm so glad because, like, I consider you a dear friend and somebody in the YouTube space who I can complain to about different things.
Yeah, I mean, we need, as much as we do have, what I hear is, like, the ultimate dream job of middle schoolers these days.
Which those
kids should really aim higher.
Right.
But so despite that, there's still a lot of stuff to complain about with our jobs, like every job. And I do like it when we get together and, you know, unload our frustrations about the world of YouTube.
Well, not just YouTube, but also, dare I use the word cinema these days. I think that movies, you've done a great job on your channel, right? So like over here, we rarely get to cover things like Sinners, you know, because we're doing the Marvel and the Star Wars and all that stuff. Whereas like, you know, you went to Bollywood. Bollywood's not a place. You went to India to cover Bollywood. You and created Bollywood and stood in the middle of it.
That is true. Bollywood, it's now a neighborhood and it didn't used to be. Also, I'm gonna be sorry.
No.
Just before anyone gets mad at me saying that sentence, I am joking. Bollywood is a name. This is a nickname for an industry. It is not a real place.
Well, I'm heartbroken. It's funny though to look at your stuff now, right? And you doing like high concept things like going to India. And I remember when you started out, right? Like I remember seeing your very early videos. So how did you start out doing this? Like, what was your profession before? And then how did that lead into just going, oh, I think I might want to talk about this on a video for a while?
The super condensed version of this, because, you know, it's a long story. At the start of the month, I logged into my YouTube account and it gave me a little notification that said, hey, congrats, happy birthday. Your channel is 14 years old today. And then I proceeded to walk into traffic because I am, you know, I'm like on death's door anyway. But basically, I started the channel in 2011 and for a very, and for a long time, I was never looking to make the channel like profitable or make a career on YouTube. I was looking at YouTube the way people generally look at Vimeo, mm-hmm. which is, this is just a portfolio. Mm-hmm. This is for me to do filmmaking work that hopefully will get some attention and then lead to work elsewhere, which is why when you look at the first 6 years of the channel, there is absolutely no strategy. I was going about it really stupidly. The channel was named after me, but I was not in most of the videos.
Were they sizzle reels, things like that you had cut?
No. They were all like narrative short films and stuff like that. So the What If Wes Anderson directed X-Men, like, which was,
yeah,
that was the thing I was best known for a long time. That came out in 2015. Like, the channel was not...
Yeah, I would see that at Alamo. Like, that gets play, like, all over the place.
Yeah, when there's an X-Men movie, it's part of the Alamo pre-show. But, but like, back when I made that, and even after I made that, the channel didn't make money and had a very, very small audience. So it was just stuff mm-hmm. like that. Like, I have a super brief, like, one-line cameo in the X-Men video, but I'm not, like, in it. And so basically, like, an individual video might, like, go viral or do well, but then the audience would not increase. No one would stick around, right. And I would take, like, a month to make every video. And, you know, like I had hoped, occasionally a video would do well, it would get attention, it would seemingly lead to opportunities where, you know, especially after the X-Men one, where I'd be, like, you know, meeting with, like, producers and production companies and developing projects and stuff like that. And basically every single thing just inevitably fell apart. Nothing.
It usually does statistically.
I learned. I got really excited that I was like, "Ooh, great! It's all happening. Done with YouTube now." And then everything fell apart. And then I was back at YouTube, and I was like, "I don't have any ideas that are as good as What If Wes Anderson directed X-Men."
Can I step in real quick? Because my favorite video, I think, of your short films like that was Werner Herzog's Ant-Man.
I think that was
inspired, man. Like. That video, I don't know who you got to do Herzog in it, but it was hilarious.
That was my friend Scott, who was a Juilliard-trained actor. You know, we put that training to good use. Here's the thing. If I was smart about this, I already had the idea for it. I would have had that come out, like, 2 weeks after the Wes Anderson X-Men. Instead, sure. I made it, like, 4 months later, so there was, like, no momentum there. But then basically what eventually happened is I decided to give YouTube one last shot and try to see if I could, like, make it work. And I decided that instead of trying to make, like, big, ambitious, like, potentially viral videos, I would just, like, aim for, like, a consistent schedule and just make a video that came out every Wednesday. Mm. And I was like, I'll give myself 3 months to see if I can make that work. And then 3 weeks in, I released my first video essay called Why Do Marvel's Movies Look Kind of Ugly?
That was your first?
Yeah.
That was one of the biggest ones you've ever done.
It's the biggest one I ever did. So really, I peaked at... it's like my Citizen Kane, you know? I've never topped the first one.
My first video that I hosted was Spider-Man 2 versus Amazing Spider-Man 2. And it's not the biggest, I think the Ultron one, like, but as far as a video essay, it's by far the biggest one. And it was the first one right out the gate.
Yeah. It is weird to look back and be like, oh, wow, all these years later have not topped that. I mean, I've made better videos, but like.
Well, no, I was about to say, like, you put that out, what, 2016?
Yeah. It was the week after election day, 2016.
But it's peak Marvel, and you know, it's peak Marvel time, and it's a hot take title, right? It's a concept that it's smart, but it's not too heady that the casual consumer can't understand it. You know what I mean?
And I know exactly.
It's very,
what you mean.
It's funny, very user friendly. Yeah.
Well, because at the time, I've established, I was so bad at, like, YouTube strategy. At the time, I thought no one would watch it because I was like, it's about color grading.
Yeah.
No one cares about that.
Right.
And then it did well. And then I learned more and was like, oh, wait, I understand exactly why this did well. And it's like, it's the thing that I wish I could, I think we all wish we could do every time, but is really hard to do when I got lucky with that, which is the video, obviously it had a, you know, a kind of like attention grabbing, you know, discussion starting, like hot take title about a popular thing. But then it's the thing where it articulated a thing that people had sensed, but not put into words. And so it became like the thing where people would like send it to their friends and be like, oh, this is this thing that I was like trying to like explain, but I didn't know how to say it. And like, and for these, if you can like hit that nail on the head of like, no one has quite talked about this, but people have like been feeling it before, then that's perfect. And as it's clear, well, I've never done it as
so
well.
So basically
since.
What you're saying is you made fetch happen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Heather, you said that, not me, but I will take it.
What you also did in that video that works so well is like, one of the strengths of the MCU was that the color palette kind of looks the movies look similar. And you were saying that was a weakness. Mm-hmm. But you years later, I remember you did another video. And I remember it so well because I love Peanuts. And you did this thing where you were auto against a wall. And one of your friends came up like, what's wrong, Patrick? And you're like, everybody likes these Marvel movies so much, but I don't. And you were like Charlie Brown not knowing how to celebrate Christmas.
Yep.
It was a great video where you have legitimate gripe with the MCU. And this is like 2018, 2019. When people
I will
not
tell you,
about
it was like 2 months before Endgame came out.
Yeah.
So that was the impetus for it. And yeah, it was a three-parter, which I was like, I'm going to put all of my thoughts on the MCU into these three and then never make a video about Marvel movies ever again.
Yeah, well, that didn't work out quite so well for you. But you really don't go there that often, though.
Wait, excuse me. No, I have not done a like strictly Marvel video since then. I'll mention it.
You've addressed it. You have addressed it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'll give you that.
I'm not like, I will never say the word Marvel, but I have not made a video like
specifically
like, focused on a Marvel thing in 6 years.
That video is great too, because at the end of it, you talked about how one of the weaknesses of the MCU was it's not like the comics. It's like the crossover events in the comics, but you wanted all the in-between stories. And then you said, yeah, I want to go. It makes me want to go read like Jason Aaron's run on Thor. And I was like, I got to go read that run. And I did. And it's amazing. So like
so good.
Anytime. Yeah. You're so great. Both of you have been so great about recommending comics to me over the years. Another video that I appreciate, and I think people who watching this channel appreciate, is how to analyze cinema, which was fantastic.
Thank you.
One of my favorite ones. Patrick does this thing in it where you just, as an example, you can make a video about Home Alone, but as an example, you analyzed Home Alone and you brought up the color in it and how blue is a color that typically means away from home, and red and orange and yellow mean home. So it's kind of the opposite of Star Wars, where blue means good and red means bad. And even just little details like that, you're so great at making us take things that are familiar and looking at them in different ways. Why'd you put that video together?
That was a funny one. So Nebula, a company that I'm heavily involved in, like indie streaming platform that have, you know, they have produced and financed the recent movies I've made, and they started a thing a few years back called Nebula Classes that were kind of, like, for lack of a better term, like kind of like masterclass, but taught by like creators, like about you know, like how to do different things, and they asked me to do one of the classes, and I was like, great, I'll do one on like film analysis, like, you know, basically just like put like a cinema studies degree into a video. And then I wrote the whole thing, and then suddenly, like, legal realized that, oh, this is not like a regular video essay. Like, this, using this footage will not be fair use if we, like, pay you to make this.
Oh, right.
And this is, like, and as much as I'm doing analysis in it, the purpose of it is this is, like, a class first and foremost. And so they're like, we can't afford to license the footage from it. So I ended up making another class for them called How to Make a Movie. And so I just took the script from the How to Analyze Movies and just made it and put it on my own channel. And so that's why it doesn't quite feel like one of my regular videos, because it was literally made for a separate thing. But yeah, I this is a thing. It was actually, I believe it was Devin from the channel Legal Eagle who had suggested this to me several years ago. He was like, you should do a video where you like explain how to do like just like how film theory works, and pick a movie that everybody has seen but no one's ever like thought that seriously about, and then like apply all of film theory to it. And I was like, oh, maybe I should do that. And then it took me like 3 years to do it. But that was basically it. And it's like, I've seen Home Alone a trillion times. I know it by heart. It's a movie that is like not taken seriously, but is like deceptively well made. And so I thought that would be a fun example to be like, let's like extract every bit of meaning we can from this like wacky family film and be like, oh, actually, like the color theory of the film is like so deliberate and just like every angle is so deliberate. And there's so much meaning packed into like every frame. And it's been a funny one because like that video, it like, you know, did average views when it came out, but then has just like steadily
evergreen.
It just keeps going. Yeah. And it's like, I've gotten multiple emails and letters from like high school teachers who have told me, oh, I use that in my classes for just like teaching students how to discuss and analyze art. And
I use like, that literature. In my classes for when I have a hangover and I need the kids to stop watching.
That's what I'm here for.
So, you know, I know it's kind of like the most trivial question of all time, where do you get your ideas? But you have such a swath of very intricate, you know, topics that you cover, right? You have, what is cozy cinema, right? Where you talk about the sweaters in film. Mm-hmm. And then you have, is Speed Racer the most important film of the 21st century, which it is, you know, all the way to the color grading and the deep dive into Bollywood. And you kind of bounce around all over the place from these very, very serious topics to things that might seem a little more surface level. And how do you pick and choose from where you get these?
It's very helpful that I only do a video about like every 3 or 4 weeks, unlike Ryan, who has to just crank them out so fast.
I'm so tired. I'm writing so much right now.
And
can either of you please give me an Ironheart script? I'll give you $50 right now, please, for an Ironheart script.
Truly, until you mentioned it in the intro, I was like, I didn't know that show was coming out.
Pretty good so far, man. They're pushing Coogler, but go continue, please.
Oh, sorry. But so as far as the ideas, just with like everyone in my life, I just like talk about movies all the time and I think about movies all the time. And what kind of like determines for me, like if I'm going to make a video is because it usually like I'll have it like an idea for a video and then it will take me anywhere from 4 to 12 months to actually sometimes like to multiple years to actually get around to making it. So I just kind of like, it kind of like marinates in like in my brain for like a long time as like, and then maybe eventually like I kind of like crack some larger part of the take or some new thing comes together. I'm like, okay, now I've got like a stronger thesis. Like I'm ready to make it now. But it's really just like what for me, a video is worth making is if it's a subject or topic that if I was not making videos, I would still like obsessively research and just monologue to my friends about like, here's the stuff I learned. Or have you ever like looked at these movies and like what they actually kind of mean or represent in, you know, in like the history of cinema and like and their impact on like or the way they reflect a larger cultural trend. It's always
that's
just
the stuff that I am obsessed with.
I look forward to your video essay on the film I introduced you to, Patrick, A Dinosaur Story.
I mean,
oh, we're back, A Dinosaur Story by wasn't
yeah.
or they, was
we're
it their back?
I
we're
introduced
back.
Patrick to that. I
we're
made
back.
Patrick
yeah, yeah, yeah.
watch that, and it was
yes.
Isn't that a Don? Is that a
it's
Don Bluth?
No, it's
no.
not Don Bluth.
No, it's not. But Ryan, do you know who wrote the screenplay?
Shit, I do not. Please enlighten me.
Pulitzer Prize winner John Patrick Shanley.
You're shitting me.
Nope.
Pulitzer Prize winner? John Patrick?
Yes.
The John Patrick Shanley.
Yes. Obviously the writer of Doubt wrote that movie.
Oh my God. Wow. That reminds me of one of my favorite showbiz, stories about David Lynch directing that shampoo commercial. You guys ever heard that one?
No.
So David Lynch just wants like, I read this when Wes Anderson directed that like milk or Coke commercial. People were like, what a sellout. And people were like saying, hey, one guy in this thread said, I worked crew on a shampoo commercial once and David Lynch directed it. It wasn't an obscure shampoo commercial. It was like for L'Oreal. He just needed the money and that's okay. Like you can just apply your craft in technical ways and get away with it.
That's the thing. Like, especially unless you're making like big mainstream movies, directing movies takes years of your life and doesn't pay very well. So like almost every like film director that you've heard of, unless they are so, I mean, actually even the ones that are so crazy successful, you think they don't need to, in between movies, they're just like directing commercials. Like
This is please. But I have a more important follow up because we glossed right over this. The guy who wrote Doubt, right? That incredible play, the movie starring Meryl Streep and everything.
Also directed the movie.
Is We're Back, A Dinosaur Story good?
I have a great fondness for it.
Okay, so it's not a hidden gem. It's can you fucking believe this guy wrote this movie?
But it's also, Ryan, when did you last see We're Back?
I was in probably single digits.
Okay, it is deranged. It is truly I will say
Steven Spielberg produced both the greatest dinosaur film and the worst dinosaur film within the span of a year. And I will let you decide which is which.
Wait, that movie came out in the early 90s? Okay, so I would have been 11 or 12. If I've seen it, I don't know. Maybe I've just seen the trailer. Because now, for some reason, the song from Oliver and Company stuck in my head.
No, it's not that, but there is a song, and it is sung. Is it, who's it? Is it John Goodman? It's John Goodman. Yeah.
Well, John Goodman is the T-Rex.
He's the one who sings it. Yeah. It's John Goodman. There is a song.
Do you guys know my favorite like childhood thing to revisit? This is like a fashion. I think I told this to Greg Albo on his podcast. Do you remember The Brave Little Toaster?
Oh, I love The Brave Little Toaster.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing movie, right? So,
I mostly remember being just a terrifying movie.
It's horrifying, yeah, but, you know, movies were back then. It was a Disney Channel movie. I didn't have the Disney Channel, so, like, a friend taped it on the VHS, whatever, we had it. But there's a part of that at the end where the Brave Little Toaster jumps in these gears to sacrifice his life for his friends. And if I'm ever, like, really, and I just need a cry, I don't, like, put on the news. I don't put on, like, Rudy. I put on the Brave Little Toaster. Because that little guy at the end, he gives it all for his friends, you know?
It's true. Yeah, I have not watched that since I was maybe 8 years old.
You don't need to.
unless you need a really good cry.
Maybe.
Or you love John Lovitz, because John Lovitz plays the radio in it.
I mean, who among us does not? At least I enjoy John Lovitz.
Yeah, okay, so I got to see We're Back, A Dinosaur Story. I don't know what that's streaming on. I think it's for free on YouTube. It's shocking how many movies... Blowout is free on YouTube.
What?
Yeah, I needed to get a clip from Blowout for our Winter Soldier breakdown. I was like, actually, have I seen Blowout? And so, like, I was looking for it streaming, and lo and behold, some dude just put it up on YouTube.
Damn. Ryan, if you needed a clip, I've got it ripped. I've got the Criterion Blu-ray. I've got it in my big, like, hard drive stack of movie files.
The thing is, I didn't know the clip. So, Winter Soldier, right? We're doing this breakdown in it that isn't just like reading IMDb facts. In fact, we found mistakes on IMDb we point out to call out other people who do just read IMDb facts. So the Russo brothers, you know, they referenced all these things that they were influenced by, like the shootout in Heat, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the things they talked about was Blowout. And so I realized it wasn't necessarily the tone, like a scene in the movie, it was the tone. It was that John Travolta's character keeps trying to do the right thing, and just it's kind of inevitable that he ends up in this bad situation. And they wanted to create that feeling without the actual terrible ending, because it's a Captain America film. So that's more what it was. It was hard for me to like articulate what I was looking for. So I was kind of just going through and looking for scenes. I don't even think on a technical level they replicated it. Like there's no split screens or anything like that in the film.
I wish that a Marvel movie looked like a Brian De Palma movie, but none of them do. Blowout is like one of my favorite movies ever. I love it so much.
I need to watch it all the way through. I've never actually seen it.
I think De Palma's like one of my guys. One of my projects in lockdown 5 years ago was finishing watching every single De Palma movie. Yeah.
Oh wow.
And I think Blowout's my number one.
No shit. Yeah. All right. You know, we were talking, you haven't seen every Scorsese, and this weekend, I'm going to see you again because we're going to go watch Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore with Marsha Lucas present.
Yeah.
Which I'm pretty stoked about.
I know.
I'm not going to ask any questions about Star Wars.
Not a word.
Though I will want to.
Well, you'll just ask about, you know, the stained glass window.
Yeah. And then I'll bring up, hey, are the prequels about your divorce? because that's like my fan theory that I put in videos before. But that's theory. That might get awkward, right?
Yeah. No, that is, yeah. That's how many? I'm trying to think. Outside of the documentaries, I feel like there are maybe like 4 Scorsese's I haven't seen, and that's one of them. So, hey, going to cross it off the list.
Apparently one of the good ones. I've never seen it either, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. One of the good ones. Back, yeah, he's got a few that are all right.
Well, I don't know how much The Color of Money holds up as like a... I really, really love The Color of Money, but it's not in this high canon, I don't think.
No, well, here's the thing. I think that movie rocks, and it is like maybe mid-tier for him.
I'm back. Pow. You know? So back though, that's a good transition to this next thing, right? So you, one of my favorite videos you've ever done was Who Killed Cinema, because you talked about like all these different things, why people don't go to movies. It's a great video. I'm not going to spoil it for people.
Listeners, viewers, heads up. It's like 90 minutes long. That video is way too long.
No, it's not. Because look, I always tell everybody, they ask how long you want this to be. And I say, as long as it is good. Like, if you have more things to say and if the edit's compelling, you can always take things out.
That is true.
You had a video where you were like, here's, I think it was 5 suspects. Everybody from David Zaslav to Marvel movies to Netflix on Who Killed Cinema. And I think it was important that you address them all the way that you did. But what I really loved about that video was you, and we don't get to do this very often with our stuff, you chose a concept, which is it's a murder mystery. We're figuring out a crime. You know, and you always have like sidekicks and stuff like that. None of them as adorable as Doug, but it was a great concept for that. We all related to it and it kept people. Maybe that's why I didn't even notice it was an hour and a half. Where did that particular high concept come from for that video?
That is a really good question. That was a video that I've, you know, when I said that usually like takes a while for me to actually get around to making it, that was one such example. I think that maybe took about 2 years to finally make. But originally, it was a thing where a couple months before that video came out, a video that I'd been promising to make for years, I released about my longstanding beef with the word content.
Yeah, I remember that video. Oh, I love that video. Is so good.
I can't. Yeah, I cannot hear the word content.
I hate
anymore.
It. Because of that.
Same. So I've had a longstanding beef with the word content to the point where we're just dropping in our merch store.
Amazing.
Content, no Perfect. Content hats.
Yep.
So to plug the merch. But this is the thing that if you go back through like my social media accounts, just like other videos, I would always mention I don't like the word content to describe like creative work. And then so I thought about it for years and years and years and finally committed to making a video, like articulating all these reasons why I don't like that word. And the way I'd originally been conceiving it was that the video, we would talk about the evolution of this word, especially like in this modern era. But then it would also get into why, especially like into the way that content is also now used to describe like movies and TV and the way that I think like the mindset, especially from like studio executives in terms of like referring to the work they're producing as content is leading to like a devaluing of and degradation of cinema. And then there are larger trends that that kind of like connect to this that like having an impact on just like this art form, you know, potentially being in a bad place. And then the more I worked on it, the more I realized, oh, these are two separate videos. I will like it would just be like hours and hours long if I were to try to make it all as one thing. So I was like, the content one will be its own one, but then it will kind of like thematically tee up the next one about like what is up with the state
the industry,
of
yeah.
cinema and what are all of these like problems or like, things that might be responsible for it being in a bad place. And so that's how it got there. And then it was something where we collected so much research for the Who's Killing Cinema one. And
incredibly detailed video.
Thank you. And I was working with my team of Jacob Torpy and Michael Curran, who right on everything that I do. I've known them since high school. They've, you know, whether it's like they, you know, they wrote Night of the Coconut. They wrote The Dinner Plan, mm-hmm. the movie that we're finishing up now. They work on every video we do. And one of, and we're trying to figure out like, what's a good, like conceptual premise for this video about like cinema being like potentially in decline, or and we knew that it was split into these chapters, and then one of them threw out, what if we did it as like a murder mystery where we went through a list of suspects, and then we could, you know, have like kind of like a conspiracy board with like strings and stuff like that up on the wall, and mm-hmm. And then structurally it just made a lot of sense because like each suspect is like its own chapter, and it just like I mean, like I think that's the best video we've made, and that's just one of those instances where like it just the combination of like topic and then like narrative premise connected so perfectly that I'm like, I wish I could do that every time.
And that's another one like that, the how to watch movies video that you did, that's just instructive. I mean, if I think about that all the time, it naturally comes up in conversation when we talk here on the channel, when we talk about like the state of Marvel and things like that. I always bring up points that you make in that video, because I think it's very tied into the internet and everything that kind of drives the movie industry right now.
Are there any like ideas that you've had percolating in your brain for videos for years that you're still like struggling, that you're like, I don't know if I'll ever come up with the way?
Yes, I'm pulling up just in my notes app the list of potential video topics. And I'm trying to think.
I hope the Venture Brothers is one of them. I've always wanted to see you cover that show. Nobody's covered that. Like, and I love that show so much. It's better than Rick and Morty.
I agree with that.
I would too. It's really, here's the thing. Because the Venture Brothers had, as it went on, its release schedule got so weird. It would just be like years between seasons. At some point, I was like, it's been too long. I can't remember what happened. I'm not going to watch the new season. I'm going to go rewatch it all from the start. And I never got around to doing it. So I just like haven't seen the last like two seasons. But like,
oh my God, I'm so jealous.
But when I was in college, I was so into it. So at some point I got to go back.
God, that show. I remember that started in 2004. And you're right, the movie that ended it just came out.
Yeah.
That's an amazing show though.
It's been a long time. But like, so who knows? If I rewatch it all, maybe I'll then make a video about it. In terms of the ones that I've had on the list for years, it's funny. A couple of them I'm actually planning on making in the near future, so I won't mention what those are. There was one that I was going to make last year that I even announced, like, this is the next video. And because it's such a technically complicated one that's so dependent on the location, and the location we had lined up just fell through.
Were you going to go to the tube in The Fugitive where he jumps to make a movie about The Fugitive? Because you'll do that. You went to like Kevin Smith's comic book shop for, you know, your Kevin Smith video and stuff.
I know what. Wait, here's the thing, Ryan.
Did I get it right?
No, I didn't. I wish I had. No, the Kevin Smith video, I shot it all at my parents' house.
Oh, you were going to go, but then the unfortunate thing happened. Right. Yeah. Okay, so wait, sorry, but we're off topic. What is the place that technically is?
No, the technically complicated one is a video about like long takes and oneers.
Oh, cool.
You were going to go to space and do gravity is what you were going to do. And that just didn't.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
With the rest of OK Go.
right.
Yes.
On treadmills. The oneers video, what's technical? Are you going to actually try to do it in a oneer?
Yeah.
That'll be cool.
Cool. That's really hard.
Yes. Trust me. I spent a lot of time thinking about like, okay, can we mount the teleprompter onto a gimbal? And how heavy will that make it for the camera operator? Or do I memorize the script? Actors do it.
You're going to want to use the teleprompter.
I would say you have a teleprompter.
But then you have a second person, you know, you just have people carrying it. You have a second person there or something.
You have extra help.
One of my favorite oneers, we just in our Sinners video, we pointed out like, hey, when Coogler does a oneer, it's for a reason. Mm-hmm. It's to show you the white side of the street and the black side of the street. One of my favorite oneers ever was in that show Children's Hospital. Did you guys ever see that?
The Adult Swim show?
Yeah, yeah. They did an episode that was like, we're doing this show live, right? Like they did a live show. And so to prove that it was live, I believe it was all on a oneer. And they shot it in the same hospital where they shot Scrubs. And there were all of these technical things that went incredibly wrong in the live show. Like the elevator hasn't worked since they shot Scrubs here. Take the stairs. And they're trying to like get to the next scene where the people are upstairs and they set everything up. It's wrong, but they're live. So they have to keep going. I believe it was shot in a oneer. That's one of my, like for comedy, you don't normally think of a oneer uses a comedic tool, but it worked great in that. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And it's still a great episode of Children's Hospital.
I mean, here's the thing. Maybe it's for the best that we had to delay that video a year or more. And because now I can watch that episode and incorporate it in.
And if it's not a wonder, you'll right. still enjoy it.
Well, I mean, even in terms of comedy, like mm-hmm. the studio is done like all in like really long takes mm-hmm. or wonders. And right. And I think that works really well for comedy in that show. And so as I was watching yeah. it, I was like, oh, whenever I finally make this video, I'll obviously have to incorporate this.
Well, and there's a whole episode that is about how hard it is to pull off. And that is the yeah. comedic premise of the episode.
Exactly.
That, like he keeps screwing everything up for them.
Good episode.
Before we get into Hear Me Out, because I want to get I want to hear what Heather's controversial take is. And Pat, if you have one, that's always fun, too. As far as wonders go, where do you land on the Bonfire of the Vanities opening? I know you're a De Palma guy, so that was De Palma, right?
I'm a big De Palma guy. I think that is a bad movie. It's I did make a video about it.
One of your best videos. Yeah,
I agree.
About the shot that cost $80,000.
Yeah, it's the movie just like have either of you guys read The Devil's Candy, the book about?
No.
Ryan, are you familiar with it?
Continue on.
Okay.
I'll follow along. Yeah.
It's the book by Julie Salomon where she was like,
I didn't even know the name of the writer of Doubt, but anyways, go ahead.
Where De Palma gave her full access to the production of the Bonfire of the Vanities, even like pre-production and casting. And she was embedded in the whole thing and just documented the entire process. And it just so happened that that movie turned out to be a disaster. And it is like the greatest making of movie book ever.
I got to read that.
It is a fascinating read. It is like a fiasco what happened on that set. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to read that. The wonder that opens that movie is incredible.
It is.
I was just curious if you thought that it actually served a good narrative purpose or if it's showing off.
I think it's doing both. I like especially a problem that I have with wonders now is because digital cameras are so much lighter and easier to maneuver. Mm-hmm. And then also with visual effects technology, you can like stitch a bunch of things together. And like, wonders are just way easier to do than they used to be. So there used to be a lot fewer of them. And I like the way that De Palma would often deploy it, which would be sometimes for, you know, suspense, like in the Untouchables. Or in Bonfire of the Vanities, it's like this like big, like ostentatious kind of like the curtain going up at the beginning of a production. It's like it's like sweeping you in with this big showy thing. And it's like just like following this guy like through all these tunnels and elevators and everything. And the whole movie, it's meant to be about this like really ostentatious, like you know, like ultra rich world. And so especially like that one, like, you know, he's just like drunkenly grabbing handfuls of salmon and stuff, and it ends in the Winter mm-hmm. Garden in Lower Manhattan. And that's the kind of thing where I think the over the topness of it works. I mean, I think that's the best part of the movie, the first like 8 minutes. And I like the idea. I like opening a movie with like this big like attention grabbing flourish, and I think that is one of the few things about that movie that works.
So you guys heard it here first. Patrick H. Willems thinks the Bonfire of the Vanities works, which takes us into right. Hear Me Out, where we get to say our fun little, I don't know, controversial, just things that we're thinking or on our minds. I got mm-hmm. one, Heather. I know you got one. We don't know what each other are going to say yet, but you want to, Heather? What's yours?
So I picked mine specifically because Patrick's here. I know Patrick is a fan of the Fast and Furious movies. So my Hear Me Out is I am a firm believer of the coma theory of the Fast and Furious films, that that everything that happens after the first film is because Dom is in a coma. And everything in 2, 3, all the way to X is a product of his subconscious explaining the outlander stunts, the meta levels, the plot lines that make no sense, Letty's return with amnesia, the wish fulfillment that he's nearly indestructible. He's in a coma. That's just,
Pat, you got a thought on that? I love it. To me, that franchise has gotten so over the top meta when it realized what it was that it stopped being as interesting for me. But Pat, what are your thoughts on it?
I have a lot of thoughts on this. So Heather, this is when he gets in that accident at the end of the first movie.
Yes.
Okay. So yes. What would make more sense to me, and also this kind of connects with my feelings about the later installments of the franchise in general, because so I like F9. Fast X just lost me.
Fair.
I think eight is one of the worst as well.
Eight had Jason Statham fighting on a plane with a baby.
Yeah, that is a fun scene. But also, at the time, Han was dead, and the guy who killed Han was just welcomed into the family without anyone saying Han's name. And I'm like, that is unacceptable. But basically, justice for Han. As much as I do like 9, especially after Fast X, I think the series should have ended with 7. 7 is such a perfect, beautiful ending, and it is largely directionless after that. At the end of 7, Dom basically dies and then is revived. If you say that the movies after 7 are a coma dream, that makes way more sense to me, because I also have a hard time then being like, so he just dreamt all of Tokyo Drift, which he's not involved in.
Well, but no, he's involved at the end. He also dreamed, what is it, 2, where Brian
he's not there at all.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, though, because I have dreams where I'm not always the main character in every single scene. I think it makes more sense if he has the coma after 1, because let's face it, there's a big difference between this Point Break film where they're stealing DVD players and like Nando V Movies have one of my favorite tweets of all time. It was like, oh yeah, Dom when he's unloading DVD players in Fast 1. Hey, did I ever tell you that my brother's a CIA operative and we used to do missions together? And like, it just gets to a point for that franchise, whatever Roman goes like, this is messed up. How are we still alive? And like, he started to call everything out. I was like, oh. You're like that kid we made fun of who realized we were making fun of you and now you're in on a joke and it's not fun anymore. I was that kid. Personally.
I will say this is a very interesting theory and I will think about it a lot, especially because at the rate they're going, we just might never get Fast X Part 2.
I don't think we are.
Is it called Fast X Part 2? Why do people keep doing Parts 1 and 2? I guess Harry Potter really, really set everybody up for something there.
Well, I mean, look, what was it? It was Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, and then it was Mission Impossible The Final Reckoning. Yeah. So,
yeah, but now we're never going to get Part 2. We're never going to know what happened.
But the thing is, what most of these movies do is they make, if they split into 2 parts, they like make them together or like back
they're
to back
at
or
the
as
same
one big
time,
production.
Yeah.
Fast X ends on, of all the Part 1 movies, ends on the biggest cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's a giant explosion. It's like, is everyone dead? They had not even written Part 2 yet. Like that, and the rate it's going now, it's like, it seems like there have been no updates on it.
Nope.
I really have no idea.
Imagine it ends there.
Yeah, I think that's it, guys. That's
but
it.
But movies normally take 2 to 3 years
to make.
But there's
been no updates.
But no updates.
It's not like
isn't
in production.
Good.
We haven't gotten anything. So like
even if
it was like we're in pre-production now, like let's say they fast track it and film it, you know, over the next 6 months and then editing, like we're still not getting it till like 2027.
And there was pretty much always a like 2-year break between movies in that series. And now if they get this made, it'll probably be at least a 4-year break.
Okay. So here's mine, right? It's completely unrelated. There's no way to seamlessly transition this. The other day, Jason Sudeikis was on a podcast. He talked about Ted Lasso season 4, and he said that it's going to be a woman soccer team. That's the big reason they're doing part 4. Richmond, AMC has succeeded, and they're off to that. I think it's a terrible idea because I don't, it's nothing misogynistic. That sounds like a lead into a different podcast.
Wow, Ryan.
But it is a bad idea for that reason. I mean, secondary to that, though. No, because he's already done a soccer team. I want to see a Ted Lasso season where he's in a completely different environment that is rife with toxic masculinity or whatever other problem. I want to see him in like a really dysfunctional post office or a police or a team.